Hi, I'm Dan Webster, film critic for Spokane Public Radio and blogger for Spokesman.com.
And I'm Mary Pat Truthart, part-time film critic, full-time election dissector.
And I'm Nathan Weinbender, also a film critic for Spokane Public Radio.
And welcome to Movies 101, the show that struggles only when the three of us can't find anything worthwhile to watch. Fortunately, that didn't occur this week, as we managed to see a trio of movies made by filmmakers who are particularly skilled. The first we'll tackle is Anora, the latest character study by writer-director Sean Baker. We'll follow that with Blitz, a film set during World War II, written and directed by British filmmaker Steve McQueen. And finally, we'll look at a movie whose title some of us have a hard time remembering, Small Things Like These. Another period piece, Exploration, this one based on a novella by the Irish writer Claire Keegan. Let's begin by heading to a New York nightclub. And we'll do so because that's where Anora, played by Mikey Madison, works. She prefers, by the way, to be called Annie. And her position as a server doesn't involve ferrying trays of drinks, but as someone who, in various states of undress, gives the club's patrons lap dances. Annie's life changes when, because she has some Russian language skills, she is introduced to a young Russian guy, Ivan, played by Mark Edelstein, whose rich lifestyle dazzles her. So taken is she that she agrees impulsively to marry him while they party hardy in Las Vegas. But that opens up a sea of troubles when Ivan's handlers, who work for Ivan's demanding parents, find out what's happened. Writer-director Sean Baker, whose previous films include Tangerine, The Florida Project, and Red Rocket, specializes in documenting the lives of characters who live on the edge of society, and not all of it is pleasant to view. Baker tends to moderate the mood by adding in a measure of humor, some of it actually hilarious, and his filmmaking style is addictive, making it hard to look away even when, as in the case of Annie, his characters are difficult to embrace.
Well, this might have been my most anticipated movie of the second half of 2024.
I mean, just because you've been talking about it since last fall.
Yeah, every week.
Fall.
When is Anora coming out? Because this movie won the Palme d'Or at this year's Cannes Film Festival, and Sean Baker is just one of my favorite American indie filmmakers. And I certainly was not disappointed by Anora, but I wanted to love it a lot more than I did. And I'll get into why I think that is. But like many of Baker's other films, which include, as you mentioned, Tangerine and Red Rocket, and what I think is still his masterpiece, The Florida Project.
Absolutely.
This is part screwball farce, part gritty drama, part genuine kind of starry-eyed romance. And again, Baker is just empathetic to people that, as you mentioned, mainstream society has either ignored or outright vilified. I mean, he makes these characters fully rounded protagonists in the kinds of stories that normally don't center them. I think with Anora, though, this is a long movie. It's about 2 hours and 20 minutes. And I think the middle section of it, and this is why I think I wasn't cold on it at all. I really, really liked Anora, and I think it's absolutely worth seeing, and it's wonderfully made and acted. But I do think that part of what's keeping me from embracing it all the way is the middle section of the movie, I just think, hits the same note way too many times. It's like it gets stuck in the same high gear, and it becomes a little bit repetitious. And I would compare it to Baker's breakout film, which was Tangerine, which is about a decade old now, was shot with iPhones on the street of L.A.
With
unknown actors. And that was also a movie about these sex workers who were on the hunt for this missing guy. In that case, they owed him money. In this case, the heavies need Vanya. That's what he goes by. They need Vanya back. But that movie was only about 90 minutes long, and it has this barreling, heedless tension as they wander the streets trying to find this guy, pinballing from one place to another. And I think Anora loses that a little bit as it goes. I think it's mainly just because it's them going to one location, looking for the guy, leaving, going to another location, looking for the guy, and leaving. And that's a good half hour of the movie. I think that the setup of Anora, the first hour and some change, is really terrific as we're getting to know these characters and getting to know Annie. And then I think the ending comes back around and works really well and actually hits with a wallop that you're not really expecting after, as you said, the middle section also has a lot of really explosive and vulgar comedy in it. I wasn't expecting the movie to be as funny as it was either, I will say that. So even though this isn't like a capital L love for me, I really liked Anora, and I think that Sean Baker is operating in a different caliber than a lot of other filmmakers that are trying to tell these kinds of stories, that are trying to tell fictional stories about marginalized people using unknown actors. He's found a groove with that. And yeah, this movie is big and boisterous and entertaining in all the ways that the trailer suggested. So I was happy for that.
Yes, I liked Anora too. Did I love it? I'm not so sure. One of my friends who saw it did say that perhaps we want to give people a heads up in case they have not seen the trailer, that in Anora there is a lot of profanity, for me, who uses the F word frequently in conversation. It started to wear on me a little bit. So I'm just putting that out there. The other thing is, I mean, some people might consider the first part to be a lot of nudity, softcore porn, whatever. So we need to put that out there for people
so they know what they're getting
into. No, it's not that bad, but it's still, I think people...
The language, though, yes.
Yeah. I mean, even by my standards, I was like, whoa. But we didn't talk, or you didn't talk too much about the performances. Mikey Madison, you know, this has been touted as a star-making turn for her. And I think that that has some justification because she does have to play. I mean, we think we know who this character is at the beginning. We realize that her life has probably been challenging. Some of the movie takes place in like South Brooklyn or Brighton Beach. So she's, you know, comes from an immigrant family and so forth. And so, you know, I think we get the impression her life hasn't been easy. But at the same time, she seems to be pretty savvy and so forth. But that's where I sort of got a little confused about this because, you know, she meets up with Vanya and it's a business transaction initially. And I would say, I don't know who Mark Edelstein is, but captured.
You talk this, about a star making.
Yeah, this role perfectly.
Really good.
He was really very good. And I thought the chemistry between them was also very good. But then she, you know, Annie starts to demonstrate this naivete that just didn't seem to fit with her character. Now, I think that was supposed to show her vulnerability and who she was, but I wasn't quite buying the fact that she seemed to have attributed more to this relationship or course of dealing with Vanya than any of us thought was going to be possible. But I think the secondary characters, as is always the case in Sean Baker's movie, really make this film ultimately pop.
All the supporting players really feel like flesh and blood people that we come to know over the course of the movie, even though they might not have a lot of screen time.
Yeah. The only other thing that I agree completely with both of you, I was not... Of the four films that I mentioned of Sean Baker's, I would put this really near the bottom of that four because Florida Project is terrific. I think Tangerine was terrific. Red Rocket, and then Anora. Now, that's not to say that Sean Baker in any way is a filmmaker that you can overlook. This guy is one of the best working up there today. He works in a way that is, as I tried to say, it's addictive to watch. His movies are just so, they just move, and the characters are so intriguing. And who else out there is studying the offbeat, outrageous, often unlikable characters that he is?
Well, but in a way that doesn't feel like he's looking down
no,
on them.
Exactly.
Or
no,
exactly.
Or condescending to them in any way. No.
Like, he's just kind of showing, like, these are how these people are. Yeah. And sometimes they talk in a way that is very coarse.
Sometimes they
interact with each other in a way that's maybe a little bit violent. And it takes us back at first, but we come to realize this is the world that these people inhabit. And they're reactive characters. They're not just being pushed down by society or by the world.
The only other flaw, and I don't know that it is a flaw, but it's something that bugged me, was that I started noticing the way he was setting up his camera and he was featuring a particular character and I went, oh, well, obviously this character is going to be more.
I know what
and,
you mean.
And it just, and as it turned out, the very ending that you were talking about being a shattering ending features this very character. And so I hadn't noticed his doing that in his other movies. That's kind of an obvious bit of foreshadowing that took me out of the movie.
Well, and it does kind of feel like Anora is, it's weird to say this, but perhaps his most mainstream
I was
going to
say the same
film.
Thing, which sounds a little strange.
Right. But I mean, Anora, near the beginning of the movie, Annie refers to herself as Cinderella, or somebody else compares her to Cinderella. And the movie does sort of have that fairy tale gloss to it for a little while. And we know the spell is going to break, not only because it just has to, we're only, you know, 45 minutes into this movie, but also because we know Sean Baker's work, and it does. And I don't think we've stressed enough how good Mikey Madison is in this movie. She's only been in a few other films. She was in
Once
one
Upon
of the,
a Time in Hollywood.
She was in one of the Scream movies. She was one of the Manson girls in Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. I think this is a terrific performance, and it's what pulls the movie together.
I think the one last thing I would say about Enora is that those of us who've seen movies and television shows about Russians and Russian mobsters and everything, there's a sense of tension in Enora that runs all the way through, and you keep expecting, oh my God, somebody's going to die here or something really horrible is going to happen, and it just becomes realistic.
Yeah, he pulls just, back. He pulls
exactly.
back from that.
Yeah. That was our discussion of Sean Baker's Enora. This is Movies 101, and it's time to take a short break. Before we go, remember that you can access podcasts of Movies 101 by going online at SpokanePublicRadio.org. While there, check out the individual reviews that Nathan and I write. Don't do it now, though, because we'll be right back to discuss Blitz and small things like these. You're listening to Movies 101 on Spokane Public Radio. And we're back. This is Movies 101, and I'm your host, Dan Webster. During the first half of the show, Mary Pat Truthart, Nathan Weinbinder, and I discuss Sean Baker's film, Enora. Let's now turn to two other films, the World War II saga Blitz and the Irish drama Small Things Like These. Let's begin by heading to the London of 1940. We've seen numerous films that have documented the experiences of those Britons who endured the air attacks by Hitler's Air Force during World War II. In keeping with the previous films he has written and directed, from 12 Years a Slave to his Uprising and Small Axe miniseries for BBC, British filmmaker Steve McQueen weaves a story about race into his narrative. Saoirse Ronan stars as Rita, the mother of a mixed-race boy named George, played by Elliot Heffernan. Though she works in a munitions factory, Rita is concerned about her son and so sends him off by train to a government-sponsored program to safety in the countryside, called in real life Operation Pied Piper. But George rebels, jumps off the train, and heads back to London. Blitz then becomes a road trip, following both the people George encounters while documenting Rita's attempts to locate him, all set against a London encased in flames. McQueen can't escape both an overweening sense of Charles Dickens-type sentimentality and some predictable sequencing, even if, like all his films, Blitz does show that it's the handiwork of a talented filmmaker.
The thing I found most intriguing about Blitz was I just wasn't sure where the film was going to go. And so it starts out with this sort of kinder train experience. And we see that Saoirse Ronan's character, Rita, is really conflicted about sending her biracial son away because they're really bonded. His father was apparently deported at an earlier point. And so he's been living with mom and grandpa. And she works as Rosie the Riveter-type character in this munitions factory, foundry, etc. And so when he gets on this train, we could see that he sort of lashes out at mom as he's leaving. And so he's feeling bad about that. He's feeling guilty. He's also feeling very much like the outsider, which he had already experienced in his school setting, being a biracial kid. And so I think it's a combination of things that causes George to leave this kinder train, because it's not just his longing to return to mom or to see what's happening in London. He's also being subject to bullying on the train, too. And then the next sequence of the film, not exclusively, but focuses on his journey as he meets different characters, some of whom help, some of whom pretend to help him and end up in not doing so. And that's the sort of Dickensian aspect of it. And then finally, we realize that even though he's only 9 years old, he's a very resourceful and resilient kid. And so it focuses sort of on his ability. Now, against that backdrop of this journey, we're seeing Rita and her mates working in the foundry. I think there were some misses kind of dealing with that sort of story. I mean, I'm not exactly sure what the whole band singing performance was about. That just sort of rang untrue to me in some respects, because there's this scene that takes place in the factory that just seemed unnecessary or superfluous. But Dan, as you mentioned in your overview, the one thing that McQueen does here, and no surprise based on his other films, is he sort of looks at this experience through the eyes of real people, not heroes, not policymakers, but people who are subject to these decisions that are being made, and especially those who have already been sort of marginalized in their communities. And so that's where the sort of race aspect of this comes into play, because we can see how not only George, but others are affected by what's happening in the neighborhood and in London writ large.
I'm glad you set this up in talking about Blitz, because I wanted to touch on McQueen's use of music throughout the movie, because I think it is a running theme. I don't think that scene comes out of nowhere. I think it's of a piece with what he's trying to do with music in times of strife. And it was reminding me of what he did with one of his small acts films, maybe the best of the small acts films,
Party.
Lovers Rock.
That was amazing.
At the house party. Because you have these moments where Paul Weller from The Jam plays the grandfather, who's, you know, a longtime musician. And there are long scenes of flashbacks where the family is sitting around the piano and singing. And then later, Rita is singing on a BBC radio broadcast in some kind of way of supposedly bringing people together. And then there are these moments in jazz clubs where we see people trying to have some kind of levity and, I don't know,
amidst the horror.
Yeah. And that also, I think, nicely foregrounds something that he's doing throughout the movie, which is, as you mentioned, half of the movie is this, like, almost kind of plucky kids adventure film, which I was not expecting, even though there's horrific stuff going on. It has that tone to it. And then you've got this surreal but disarmingly lovely war film happening too. The scene where they go back into the jazz club after it's been bombed. Both of those kinds of chapters to that particular story, I think, are really effective and show the kind of two modes he's working in here. I feel like this movie, Blitz, is getting kind of unfairly overlooked. I mean, it's a new movie from Steve McQueen starring Saoirse Ronan, and it's kind of getting buried a little bit. It's going to be on Apple Plus next week. It's at the Lantern right now. I'm glad I got to see it on the big screen, because it's a beautiful movie. It is flawed, I agree. It doesn't all work, but it's a fascinating look at this particular chapter in history.
I like what Mary Pat had to say, that she didn't know where the film was going. Obviously, you've forgotten Lassie Come Home. I mean, this it's the same kind of kind of movie.
It feels like a live action Disney movie from 50, 60 years ago, but with an edge to it.
Yes,
so it's almost like he's channeling those works from when he was younger.
Right.
Yeah, fascinating stuff.
That was our look at the Steve McQueen period piece Blitz. Let's now head to mid-1980s Ireland, the setting of Small Things Like These. If Blitz adds a personal touch to a familiar story, so does the feature by Belgian-born director Tim Melance that follows in the steps of films such as 2002's The Magdalene Sisters. Using as a backdrop the story of the infamous Magdalene laundries, in which young so-called fallen women were forced to work for various Irish Catholic religious orders, Melance's film focuses on the character of Bill, played by Cillian Murphy, a father of no less than five girls himself, and the son of a woman, pregnant out of wedlock, who managed to avoid being banished to a workhouse. Bill finds himself embroiled in a situation involving a local convict, its strict mother superior, played by Emily Watson, and a desperate young woman, played by Zara Devlin. Conscience-stricken, Bill must decide between doing what's right and what might affect his family's future. In adapting the 2021 novella by Claire Keegan, Melance shows he has talent, even if his film could have used just a bit more exposition.
Well, it's very, very quiet and very, very slow, Small Things Like These. It reminded me of something that Terrence Davis might have made, British filmmaker. And there were times where I found this movie to be effectively meditative, and then there were other times where I also found it to be kind of stultifying, because it has this interiority that is either going to pull you in or push you away. And I found it mostly pushed me away, but when it did work, I thought it was really effective. And you look at Cillian Murphy, who won an Oscar this year for a role in Oppenheimer, the camera was often very close to his face, and he has to convey this emotional turmoil without words. And he does that again here, where his character is an observer. He spends a lot of time simply looking or thinking and deliberately backing into shadows when he sees something he shouldn't be seeing. And of course, the point of the movie is that that's what everybody in this town has been doing, is they've been shrinking away into the shadows. And that there comes a point where he realizes, I can't do that anymore. But it's done in a way that doesn't hammer you over the head, even though the constant shots of him washing his hands clean, I got, okay, I think I get what that symbolism right. is supposed to be. But for the most part, I thought that for the kind of heavy material that this is working with, it is surprisingly restrained. And I would much rather see a movie that is surprisingly restrained about this particular subject than one that is going to hit me
hammer
over,
you
the
over the head yeah,
and be
yeah.
really manipulative yeah. and obvious. And this is not those things.
I guess stories about the Magdalene Laundry, the whole concept just infuriates me. And I can understand it intellectually that these nuns were doing the bidding of others and that they had separated themselves from these girls who had gotten in trouble because they're the pure ones and the other girls made bad choices. But I don't know. I mean, that story just is so heartbreaking to me in every way. And so we have Emily Watson, who plays the Mother Superior. And I believed her. The person that I struggled with the most, honestly, was Cillian Murphy because, you know, he just came off of his Oscar-winning turn in Oppenheimer and so forth. I thought he was too good looking, too much of a star in some respects to be in this film. I imagined this character being this sort of burly, more fumbly kind of guy.
Maybe like a Kieran Hines?
Well, yeah.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, okay. Exactly. And so that really did not work
for me. Or
Timothy
Spall.
Right. That really did not work for me. But I loved the fact that this guy has this heightened awareness. He knows what his mother's experience was, although we're not exactly sure who his father is. We think maybe there are
we
reasons
think we know.
Why
yeah,
the
I think
employer
I know.
Yeah. You know, was so ultimately kind to him. But he has these five daughters, and that's shaping his perspective on the world. And I liked that aspect of it a lot.
Yeah. I agree with you about Cillian Murphy. He's amazing to watch. I liked watching him in this film, but I just kept thinking he's a little too young, you know, especially with the woman who played his wife, the actress, I can't remember her name right now, but she was actually in the Magdalene Sisters movie. Also,
yeah.
She played one of the young women in it. So I think we all agree that this is a flawed movie, as are all three that we've talked about, but all of them are absolutely worth watching. As long as you're clued into, say, Anora, you're not too sensitive to profanity and nudity. At any rate, that was our discussion of the film Small Things Like These, and this is Movies 101. I'm Dan Webster, and earlier in the show, Nathan Weinbender, Mary Pat Truthart, and I discussed Sean Baker's Anora and Steve McQueen's Blitz. Let's take this moment to thank Cassie Fox for both producing and engineering the show. And we thank you to our loyal listeners. We invite you back next week, same time, same spot on the radio dial, when we'll again check out all the best that cinema has to offer wherever we can find it. Until then, consider these words from the late psychiatrist and author Elizabeth Kubler-Ross. The most beautiful people we have known are those who have known defeat, known suffering, known struggle, known loss, and have found their way out of the depths. You're listening to Movies 101 on Spokane Public Radio.
The Movies 101 podcast is made possible by the members of Spokane Public Radio. Become a member at SpokanePublicRadio.org. Thanks for listening to Movies 101.